This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Let's talk about Malaysia's vaccination efforts, because Vaccine Minister Khairi Jamaluddin announced last week that his initial June projection for mass supply of COVID-19 vaccines will be delayed to July. This, of course, has sparked concern among people given the current wave of alarming infections.
Now, as of yesterday, Malaysia charted close to 7,000 new cases in a single day, a new record high, with Selangor leading with 2,235 new cases, bringing the cumulative number of cases in the state to over 160,000. The country is also seeing its first local transmission of the Indian B.1.617 variant, which, according to health experts, is highly transmissible and severely affects younger adults.
In fact, data from the Health Ministry revealed that 66 people aged 25 to 54 years died from COVID-19 between March 21st and May 4th this year, and that's higher than the 58 COVID-related fatalities among people aged 55 to 64 for that same period. So how are we to battle this frightening increase of COVID-19 cases when there is this highly infectious variant going around and vaccine supply is low? For some answers, we're turning to Azrul Mohamed Khalid, CEO at Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Thanks for joining us again this morning, Azrul. Now, people are calling for a faster vaccine rollout, but the issue that Vaccine Minister KJ keeps reiterating is that we simply do not have the supply. So what do we need to understand about vaccine manufacturing delay, and how is that affecting Malaysia?
Thank you for the question, and very good morning to everyone. I know that we are all anxious and impatient to see a much more speedy rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines, especially when we have seen the images and videos coming from India, as well as those recently shared by Malaysia's Ministry of Health. But the simple fact is that vaccinations cannot happen when there is little or no stock of vaccine available. The pace of vaccination is dictated by how much vaccine supply we have. So recently we have been informed that we are receiving or have received new shipments totaling 1.1 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine and around 500,000 of the Sinovac vaccine, with more of the Pfizer vaccines coming in July. You know, this is great news for the National COVID-19 Immunization Program, or PIC, because it means that both the main and AstraZeneca streams can go full speed ahead. Malaysia's vaccine supply problem is the same problem faced by most countries around the world, including countries and regions such as Singapore and Europe. Just because you ordered 10 million doses today doesn't mean that the entire shipment will come A, in the near future, B, all at once, C, follow the timetable that everyone agreed to when the deal was signed. Every country in the world is trying to get vaccines for their populations, and in reality, the priority and delivery of these orders is beyond the control of the Malaysian government. It could be decided by the manufacturer, depending on the volume, value, timeline of the order, as well as influenced by geopolitical realities.
So because doses are limited, do you think then a delayed second dose strategy works so that you get more exposure for people to get vaccinated?
Well, you know, the recent news from the United Kingdom is excellent regarding the effectiveness of at least two vaccines, the Pfizer, BioNTech and AstraZeneca vaccines against the B.1.617.2 variant, originally identified in India after two doses. This development may have bearing on how we consider the delayed second dose strategy. Yeah, the Pfizer vaccine currently has a recommended interval of 21 days, while the AstraZeneca vaccine has the benefit of 8 to 12 weeks between the two doses. It's important to ensure that we complete the vaccination with two jabs as possible, but it is imperative that we get at least one jab into as many arms as possible. So what we should do is implement the latter to make sure that more people have at least some protection than none at all. I think the Singaporean health minister described it quite well recently when he said that instead of having a good number of people getting maximum protection, we make sure that a maximum number of people who get good protection. So we should prioritize getting people get vaccinated with at least one dose, even if it means delaying the second.
Now, Azrul, we keep getting news flow and information with regards to states and even companies procuring vaccines. Now, I want to know, is this a good idea, actually, and is it viable since, like you say, there is this global vaccine shortage?
Honestly, ordinarily, I would agree that it would be a great idea to have a diversity of sources from which we could obtain something as critical as vaccines. But there is a fundamental problem here, which I think a lot of people fail to appreciate. You know, when there is a finite number of vaccines approved by the National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, NPRA, that are being produced by a small number of known manufacturers, in this case, we're talking about Sinovac in China and Pharmaniaga in Malaysia, increasing the diversity of sources where you can get those vaccines does not really mean that the level of access improves on the quantity of vaccine increases. You know, it's because they are all accessing the same source for the vaccines. There is not enough diversity of manufacturers, and basically their capacity is limited. So instead, what this could result is a competition amongst those who order the vaccines, the federal, state governments, and private sector. So the only way to overcome this is really to approve more vaccines, such as the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, which are not used by the government's PIC program and could perhaps easily be procured and used to complement the efforts of the federal government.
So, Azrul, can you give us an update on whether these two vaccines, which you just mentioned, Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, what's the approval process like? Is it something that NPRA is looking at?
Well, it does take a fair amount of time. And we understand that some dossiers have been submitted to NPRA for regulatory approval, but we are not very clear as to which of the new vaccines that have come online that they are looking at, which could be a feasible option for the private sector and other state governments. It's really better to not access the same vaccines that the federal government is accessing for their main program.
I mean, this debate about state and federal tensions, you know, kind of allude to perhaps the lack of transparency. Do you think that the government is not transparent enough in communicating vaccine availability? Or perhaps there is, but they need to just go a bit deeper and talk about even the process and the dynamics of that?
But honestly, you know, I'm astounded by how it is only now that this issue regarding vaccines seems to have garnered the necessary interest, because maybe it's because we're starting to see vaccines in our faces today rather than being a subjective or abstract conversation. People, including some prominent politicians, have clearly not been paying attention to the discussions last year. You know, I think that the federal government has been quite open with its facts and figures regarding what, which, and how many vaccines it ordered, to the point that detailed analysis and news reports have been produced by the health news portal CodeBlue on this issue, just using publicly available information. The Parliamentary Select Committee on Health, Science and Innovation was briefed late December, but those briefings have been disrupted due to Parliament meetings still being suspended, which I think is rather ridiculous, you know. I must give credit to the federal government for taking unprecedented steps to ensure quite a bit of transparency on many of these issues when their instinct would be to make such information privileged and restricted. Really, the information is there if people care to look.
So, Azra, I don't know whether this is a fair question, but how do you rate the government's vaccination program to date so far? Because you do see complaints about this on social media. Is it unfair?
Well, quite a bit of it is because people do not fully appreciate or understand the magnitude of the exercise being undertaken. It's unprecedented, and certainly when you consider the fact that every other country in the world is competing for the same supply of vaccines, then we'll realize that the pace of the vaccination, really, you cannot set appointments without an assured delivery of those vaccines. So I think we've been very fortunate and perhaps even complacent about health that we've never had to face this issue. But the reality is that this is a reality for many developing countries in normal circumstances. Today we're facing it and we're all complaining. So, you know, there's a huge problem here, which, you know, we need to be able to appreciate that the government is doing all it can to be able to get vaccines to as many Malaysians as possible.
I think you make a point that government is pretty transparent with the data. Now, if you go to the website Vaccine COVID, you actually see two startling pieces of data. First one is that while KL and Selangor have the same registration percentage, but the vaccination program is such a big difference. Why is there such a big difference between KL and Selangor? And then my next question is, why is Sabah so far behind in registration and vaccinations?
Well, you know, the Klang Valley is like a black hole. There's a huge population of people living in the Klang Valley. If you look at the reports coming in, and you hear that a lot of people in other states have been able to get their vaccines a lot earlier than the Klang Valley. If the government took whatever vaccines it has today and just basically provide to the people in the Klang Valley, it would barely move that percentage by much. So here you have a situation, do you cater for the Klang Valley or do you try to spread out these vaccines as much as possible to the different states? And that's what the government has done to ensure there's a certain amount of equity there with the distribution to the other states. When it comes to Sabah and Sarawak, it is a huge challenge to ensure that there is sufficient vaccines going there. And I think the Sarawak government trying to source for their own vaccines, especially vaccines that are not under the PIC program, would be a good idea, simply because they need to have those vaccines rolled out to as many arms as possible in Sabah and Sarawak due to the challenges that are presented by the logistics of getting to the remote and rural areas in those in those states. So, you know, it's a huge challenge for Sabah and Sarawak to do this vaccination program.
And very quickly, Azra, what do you think of the government's announcements of the recent stricter SOPs? Do you think that will help with the curve, to curb the current wave of infections?
So, you know, it's Hobson's choice, really, with a damned if you do, a damned if you don't situation thrown in. You can do what the epidemiologists recommend, and a lot of people are demanding for a 6 to 7 week hard lockdown akin to MCO 1.0. Which everyone seems to be clinging on to desperation. It will produce massive case reductions, but you know it is unlikely to be unsustainable and break households, businesses, massive unemployment, and significant harm to health and well-being. Or a softer MCO, which is less strict, which still allows the economy to function, jobs to be retained, and families to survive. But what happens to the number of positive cases? So we need to achieve some sort of acceptable number of positive cases, which is able to be managed by the health system without overwhelming it. This is the true meaning of flattening the curve, not getting to zero cases. And the honest truth here is that because of the harsh realities that need to be faced by the population of Asia, I don't know what the balance looks like, as it is different from country to country.
All right.
You know, so I doubt anyone really knows. And we have to try different approaches and hope that it works. What I do know is that the vaccines are the way out of this crisis. And it is imperative that we get as many people registered and vaccinated with at least one dose of a vaccine in their arms.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Azra Khalid, CEO at Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. Up next, the 7:30 a.m. News Bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.